Chapter 5. Garbert told me his top pick for the Kellum job wasn't me. It was a newly minted MP major named Duncan Monroe. Military family, Silver Star, Purple Heart, and so on and so forth. He had recently completed some good work in Korea and was currently doing some great work in Germany. He was 5 years younger than me, and from what I was hearing, he was exactly what I had been 5 years in the past. I had never met him. Garber said, "He's in the air right now, heading straight down there. ETA late morning tomorrow." "Your call," I said, "I guess." "It's a delicate situation," he said. "Evidently," I said. "Too delicate for me, anyway." "Don't get your panties in a wad. I need you for something else, something I hope you'll see as just as important."
"Like what?"
"Undercover work," he said. "That's why I'm happy about your hair, ragged and unkempt. There are two things we do very badly when we're undercover, hair and shoes. Shoes, you can buy at Goodwill. You can't buy messy hair at a moment's notice."
"Undercover where?"
"Carter Crossing, of course. Down in Mississippi, off post. You're going to blow into town like some kind of aimless ex-military bum. You know the type. You're going to be the kind of guy who feels right at home there because it's the kind of environment he's familiar with. So you're going to stay put a spell. You're going to develop a relationship with local law enforcement, and you're going to use that relationship in a clandestine fashion to make sure that both they and Monroe are doing this thing absolutely right.
You want me to impersonate a civilian?"
"It's not that hard. We're all members of the same species, more or less. You'll figure it out."
"Will I be actively investigating?"
"No. You'll be there to observe and report only. Like a training assessment. You've done it before. My eyes and ears. This thing has got to be done absolutely right."
"Okay," I said. "Any other questions?" "When do I leave?"
"Tomorrow morning, first light."
"And what's your definition of doing this thing absolutely right?"
Garber paused and shuffled in his chair and didn't answer that question. I went back to my quarters and took a shower, but I didn't shave. Going undercover is like method acting, and Garber was right. I knew the type. Any soldier does. Towns near bases are full of guys who washed out for some reason or other and never got further than a mile. Some stay, and some are forced to move on, and the ones who move on end up in some other town near some other base. The same, but different. It's what they know. It's what they're comfortable with. They retain some kind of ingrained, deep-down military discipline, like old habits, like stray strands of DNA, but they abandon regular grooming. Chapter 1, Section 8, Paragraph 2 no longer rules their lives. So I didn't shave, and I didn't comb my hair either. I just let it dry. Then I laid stuff out on my bed. I didn't need to go to the Goodwill for shoes. I had a pair that would do. About 12 years previously, I had been in the UK, and I bought a pair of brown brogues at an old-fashioned gentleman's store in a village miles from anywhere. They were big, heavy, substantial things. They were well cared for, but a little worn and creased, down at heel, literally. I put them on my bed, and they sat there alone. I had no other personal clothing. None at all. Not even socks. I found an old army t-shirt in a drawer, olive drab, cotton, originally of a hefty grade, now washed pale and as thin as silk. I figured it was the kind of thing a guy might keep around. I put it next to the shoes. Then I hiked over to the PX and poked around the aisles I usually don't frequent. I found a pair of mud-colored canvas pants and a long-sleeved shirt that was basically maroon, but it had been pre-washed so that the seams had faded to a kind of pink. I wasn't thrilled with it, but it was the only choice in my size. It was reduced in price, which made sense to me, and it looked basically civilian. I had seen people wearing worse things, and it was versatile. I wasn't sure what the temperatures were going to be in March in the northeastern corner of Mississippi. If it was warm, I could roll the sleeves up. If it was cold, I could roll them down. I chose white underwear and khaki socks, and then stopped in the toiletry section and found a kind of half-sized travel toothbrush. I liked it. The business end was nested in a clear plastic case, and it pulled out and reversed and clipped back in to make it full length and ready to use. It was obviously designed for a pocket. It would be easy to carry, and the bristle part would stay clean. A very neat idea. I sent the clothing straight to the laundry to age it a little. Nothing ages stuff like on-base laundries. Then I walked off post to a hamburger place for a late lunch. I found an old friend in there, an MP colleague, a guy called Stan Lowry. We had worked together many times. He was sitting at a table in front of a tray holding the wreckage of a half-pounder and fries. I got my meal and slid in opposite him. He said, "I hear you're on your way to Mississippi." I asked, "Where did you hear that?" "My sergeant got it from a sergeant in Garber's office." "When?" "About 2 hours ago." "Terrific. I didn't even know 2 hours ago. So much for secrecy." "My sergeant says you're going his second fiddle." "Your sergeant is right." "My sergeant says the lead investigator is some kid." I nodded. "I'm babysitting." "That sucks, Reacher. That blows big time." "Only if the kid does it right." "Which he might." I took a bite of my burger and a sip of my coffee. I said, "Actually, I don't know if anyone could do it right. There are sensitivities involved. There may be no right way of doing it at all. It could be that Garber is protecting me and sacrificing the kid." Lowry said,
"Dream on, my friend. You're an old horse, and Garber is pinch-hitting for you in the bottom of the ninth with the bases loaded. A new star is about to be born. Your history."
"You too, then," I said. "If I'm an old horse, you're already waiting at the glue factory gate."
"Exactly," Lowry said. "That's what I'm worried about. I'm going to start looking at the want ads tonight."
Nothing much happened during the rest of the afternoon. My laundry came back, a little bleached and battered by the giant machines. It was steam-pressed, but a day's traveling would correct that. I left it on the floor, piled neatly on my shoes. Then my phone rang, and a switchboard operator patched me into a call from the Pentagon, and I found myself talking to a colonel named John James Fraser. He said he was currently with Senate Liaison, but he preceded that embarrassing announcement with his whole prior combat bio, so I wouldn't write him off as a jerk. Then he said, "I need to know immediately if there's the slightest shred or scintilla of a hint or a rumor about anyone in Bravo Company. Immediately, okay? Night or day." I said, "And I need to know how the local PD even knows Bravo Company is based at Callum. I thought it's supposed to be a secret." "They fly in and out on C-5 transports. Noisy airplanes. In the dead of night, so they could be supply runs for all anyone knows. Beans and bullets. There was a weather problem a month ago. Storms over the Atlantic. They were late. They landed after dawn. They were observed. And it's a base town anyway, you know how it is. The locals pick up on the patterns. Faces they know, there 1 month, gone the next. People aren't dumb." "There already are hints and rumors," I said. "The timing is suggestive. Like you said, people aren't dumb. The timing could be entirely coincidental." "Could be," I said. "Let's hope it is." Fraser said, I need to know immediately if there's anything Captain Riley could have, or should have, or might have, or ought to have known. Anything at all. Okay? No delay. Is that an order? It's a request from a senior officer. Is there a difference? Are you in my chain of command? Consider that I am. Okay, I said. Anything at all, he said again. To me, immediately and personally, my ears only, night or day. Okay, I said again. There's a lot riding on this. Do you understand? The stakes are very high. Okay, I said for the third time. Then, Fraser said, but I don't want you to do anything that makes you feel uncomfortable. I went to bed early, my hair matted, my unshaven face scratchy on the pillow, and the clock in my head woke me at 5, 2 hours before dawn on Friday, March 7th, 1997, the first day of the rest of my life.